Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
It's the Empire of the Suns podcast coming at you during the dead period. I'm Kevin Zimmerman, joined by Kellen Olson. What's up? It's that time of year.
The infamous dead period, as it is known across the lands.
With that said, question-answer session.
There's still NBA news happening. Dame McMillan got an extension today. Carmelo got officially cleared through waivers.
Carmelo's not news.
It's kind of wild how long the offseason takes because we've still got guys like Rodney Hood who are going through restricted free agency. You're like, oh yeah, he's still doing that thing. And this keeps going, and then all of a sudden we're at the point where, oh, preseason is, media day is 2 weeks away or whatever. That's the beauty of the NBA offseason.
I guess Capella signed also, and the Suns could theoretically still sign Shabazz Napier, but, you know.
In theory?
Kevin can dream.
Yes, he can.
So, to our Twitter question, I'll start out. My boy Jeff Wheatley, assuming and setting aside the issue that the Suns aren't going to win much, what expectations do you have for how entertaining the team will be on the court? Might not be a good indicator, but Summer League felt refreshingly fun compared to the season. Should we do this on like a 10-point scale, or should we compare it to last year?
I think the best place to start is comparing it to last year.
Or two seasons ago, which was the least fun. That's like the one on the scale. Earl Watson year.
I don't think we can compare it to anything because everyone has their own definition of what entertaining is going to be for basketball. For people like me and you, it is going to be amazing entertainment to have a competent system and head coach and things like that. There's going to be real structure within the team that simply didn't exist, and that's no shots fired at Jay Triano. Anyone who came into that job three games in was going to be pretty much screwed, and it reflected in their quality of play on the court and just the lack of it. There was that run early where we were like, oh, Jay Triano's going to be the next head coach, here we go, where they had a really hot start. And that was just based on effort, really, in my opinion. I don't think there was anything structurally that was beyond anything. I think it was just the fact that there was structure. But now we're actually going to have NBA head coach quality type of structure. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I kind of agree. Because last year, I think there was structure, and then just people figured out what the Suns were doing, like, they changed so suddenly and just changed their identity. Teams didn't know what to do. And then once they kind of got a feel for what Triano was doing, they began exposing the Suns for being just not a talented team.
And TJ was the main guy where Triano ran a lot of stuff around him. And then we saw the big game I'll always remember was the Golden State one where they just shut him out of the game because they saw exactly how he was being effective. Yeah.
And then once Booker goes down and other guys go down, then it's not fun. So moving to this year, I think, again, we enter a season where it's like, I just want to see guys play a full season, like the key guys play a full season together and learn and grow throughout that season and get better. But yeah, I think the Summer League was like good because, again, like you said, Jeff said, prefacing that it's Summer League, you did see like, this is why we think Kokoshkov is going to be good because you can see what he's trying to do, and he did it with just what, a week of practice. So he has all training camp. Theoretically, he's going to get the guys to buy in and be executing well. And, you know, they're not going to be that good. But as far as product on the court, like Booker's exciting. Ayton's, we saw how much he changes things at least, even if he's just rim rolling. If last year was a, what, 3 on the scale of entertaining, could it be like a 5-6?
Yeah, I think by default, the core structure of the team is, to take it back to that word, but now with the roster, they have a volume scorer who is efficient, was efficient last year at least. We expect him to be efficient again this year in Devin Booker. They have a lot of shooters around him now. They actually have a center who is going to be able to stretch the floor beyond 4 feet. That was not a thing with Tyson Chandler or Alex Len or Alan Williams. It is with Ayton. At the four spot, now we've got Dragan Bender. We've got Trevor Ariza playing some minutes there. There's going to be some Josh Jackson and TJ Warren in there too, which is going to help them in different areas besides spacing. Then there's obviously Mikal Bridges. Elia Kobo can shoot. He's a point guard. That's another area. Brandon Knight can shoot there. You look at Tyler Ulis, Mike James, Isaiah Cannon. They weren't good shooters by any means, and those two guys could be 35-37%. So by that sheer formula, we have an efficient volume scorer with a lot of shooting around, or at least offensive talent. The Suns are going to be competitive, or they're going to have a chance to beat most teams on any night, in theory, at least based on that. Now, there's a lot of other things that can go wrong. They're a really young team. They have a new head coach. They're learning a lot of different systems. And we saw cleaning the glass broke down all the misdirections in Kokoschkov's system already just at Summer League, how there was this one set and then it decoyed into something else here and that decoyed into something else there. There's a lack of simplicity there. At the same time, there is a lot of simplicity, but at the same time, there's a lot of intricacies to his system that are going to make things challenging. And of course, we haven't mentioned defense yet. But I think theoretically, they are going to be, if Booker is an all-star caliber player like he was last year, they should be competitive in every game just by how much talent and, more importantly, just everyone who is going to play key minutes on this team has a fundamental offensive role they should succeed in. You're probably saying, like, Dragan Bender can't do anything. He can shoot, at least, and space the floor. Elia Kobo can at least pass and shoot. Brandon Knight can at least shoot and score. He's best at scoring. If there's one thing Brandon Knight is the best at in this league, it's scoring.
Yeah.
And Aiden's value is primarily going to be through rebounding and primarily through an offensive role. So that's kind of my long-winded answer to your boy would be that I think they are going to be entertaining just on the basis of how much offensive, I don't want to say firepower because it's not like they're this huge juggernaut of an offensive team by any means.
No.
But all of their value this year, and you hope in like a year or two with the evolution of Bridges and Jackson and Bender getting older and potentially Chris and potentially Ayton, that it comes more through defense. But for now, it's so offensive-centric that I think they are actually going to be pretty entertaining.
No arguments there. And I think going back to your, which everyone should read the cleaning of the glass and watch just like what little we've seen of the offense. From what I understand, like the offense is built so that it's not like, I was always taught basketball is a reactionary sport. Like there are things that you have to do within these plays that they set up, but there's like a, there are like different choices. It almost sounds like you're a quarterback in a dual threat offense where it's like, all right, if they're going to hedge on the screen when I come off here, then I have this option or I have this option. And then you just keep going down the line with your options. And each player within that play has different options. And then your role changes on what they do. So there's like a madness to it, but it's also like they're running plays. So I want to see just how the players pick up on that, if they're thinking too much, stuff like that. So I think at least through the front half of the season, it's not even going to be wins, losses for me. It's going to be like, I want to see if these guys can pick up and start getting better at these offensive principles that we know they would have had all of training camp and preseason to learn. And if they don't, then you're concerned. And then we get back to being negative.
So the biggest difference from last year to this year on the roster is we did not have guys. Alex Len, we had this discussion at some point in the middle of the second half of last season where we looked at the roster and said, who has like a good skill on this team? Alex Len is a good rebounder. TJ Warren is a good efficient score. Devin Booker obviously checks a lot of different boxes there, but the checklist was super small.
Right.
On this team, you can make an argument that everyone that is going to be playing is supposed to be good or great at least one thing, And to take it to your point of what we're going to be watching for in the first half, that's what I'm going to be watching for. Can Josh Jackson be good or great at whatever it's going to be? And that's the fascinating thing about Jackson in year two, is that it can be anything. It could be his passing. It could be his shooting is much better. It could be his scoring, obviously, or it could be his defense or his intangibles, where he's the guy. The most appealing Josh Jackson to me is not the guy who averages 23 points a game in his prime. To me, it's the guy who averages 18 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, a block and a half, a steal and a half. That's the type of Josh Jackson that's appealing to me, and I wonder if we're going to see that version of him in year two.
The Suns want to see that too, by the way.
Yes. Is TJ Warren going to be a good efficient scorer? Is Trevor Ariza going to shoot and provide defensive value? Bender, same thing. Even Chris, even guys that are much lower on the totem pole like Elie Okobo or even Shaquille Harrison, I think we know like his defense is going to be good, so he kind of doesn't count for this discussion. But to me, that and what you said both play into the fact that if a certain level of that stuff gels, guys getting the systems and being good at what they're supposed to be good at, this team's going to be really entertaining to watch.
Yeah. Next question. Where was it? Steven?
Yeah, Steven. Steven asked, to get over 30 wins, who do the Suns rely on the most to make improvements this season? Do you want to include rookies in this discussion or no?
Let's do both.
Okay.
Rookie, obviously, Ayton needs to be, just say offense even. He needs to be a rim roller. I think I'm expecting he's going to change things, even if he turns out he's going to average 10 points a game.
Jonathan Sharks wrote a really good article on The Ringer that everyone should read that encapsulates what we have talked about with DeAndre Ayton since January, is that he is talent, skill, physically capable of being great at anything that a center is supposed to do, and now it's up to him and the Suns to figure out, do they essentially want him to be Clint Capella or Karl-Anthony Towns? I don't think he's going to be one of those guys exclusively. I think he's going to be a mix of those guys or a mix of certain centers together. But to me, I think that plays into your point, which is he going to focus on more Clint Capella things in his rookie year and then start focusing more on his overall offensive game in year two?
Yeah.
Because he's going to be playing with Booker and Jackson and Warren a lot, and Brandon Knight. And those guys are all so offensive-minded that I worry how much his offense is going to get involved. And you know what? That's probably a good thing. So he'll focus on the other stuff more, but that balance is going to be fascinating for me. And I would include him. I would have a top three. I would have Ayton in there. I would have Brandon Knight in there. And I would have Igor himself in there.
Okay. That is a good story, and I wanted to mention that. Like, basically, Charks wrote he's at a fork in the road. I think he has to obviously take the fork to be Clint Capella, but I don't think he wants to get... He can do that while not getting stuck in only being a rim roller. I think your story from a while back about how... Actually, it was the day before the draft, I think, about how he needs to be Amari Stoudemire. Study him. Like, he was a rim roller initially. That's all he was. And I think Amari would still do great in today's game just being able to pick and pop from 15, and Ayton's already good at shooting from there. So I think to that point, he can do that while also trying to become Capella on defense. But to get back to the question, I think Josh Jackson needs to take a big step forward, because like, he needs to be good at something. He was not good at one thing last year. Like, he's supposed to be defense, and his coaches all along have been like, I'm still trying to convince Josh, basically, that he just needs to be a dog on defense. The offense, he's going to get points. Like, he's too good of an athlete. He has better vision than you would expect. Like, just be that energy guy.
Do I need to say it? He can't be Andrew Wiggins. He can't.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for saying that out loud. I know people. We haven't even been hovering over that yet. But he cannot be... He was efficient at the end of last year, but he cannot just be an offense only, a scorer only. He cannot be that. Even if he's an average shooter, he can't just be a the value in him was everything we just talked about earlier.
Like, there's a big difference between being what, like, a guy like Zach LaVine is and Devin Booker, which I think people don't. Nationally, people don't see it. Like, the Kings were throwing big money at Zach this summer, and it's like, what are you doing? He's just a, like, those are empty points. You don't throw that money at a guy who in 5 years is going to get paid, like, less than 10 mil. Like, that's... There's a difference between him and Devin Booker. Josh Jackson, don't go down that route. But I think to get back to the point, the Suns can be over a 31 team if Josh Jackson becomes that guy who's just going to get his buckets off doing the dirty work, hustling, and locking down.
That's... If Brandon Knight is not much better than he was in that horrible, horrible season, can the Suns even win 30 games? Assuming this is their point guard rotation, which is what we have to operate under right now.
Yeah, but I don't even know if that's just Brandon. Like, I think... I don't know. I can't imagine him being that bad, even coming off ACL. I just can't. I don't know why. I'm standing for the dude. Like, I don't think he's that bad. I know he has his flaws, but I don't think he's that bad. But yeah, he's right there with Ayton and Jackson. If those three guys around Booker take steps forward, then yeah. That's easy for me to say 30 wins if all three of them do.
Yeah, not Suns related or even NBA related. Bill Barnwell wrote a thing on the NFL. If you're an Arizona Cardinals fan, that wrote about the six most likely NFL teams to decline. He basically started out the Cardinals section saying the Cardinals were 8-8. They had Blaine Gabbert and Drew Stanton. They went 5-4 with those guys. Their defense played really well. So they should be better this year, right? With some of the additions they've made. And his answer was no, because there's a lot of health concerns. But most importantly, this is a team who has a new starting quarterback and a new head coach. The Suns have a new head coach. Their new starting quarterback is Brandon Knight now. That's just what the point guard is. And if it's not him, it's some combination of Devin Booker and Josh Jackson and Ele Okobo or something. And that's not going to work out well in terms of winning right away. So that is my main hurdle, I would say, is I'm looking at the point guard and the coach. I would say Knight is number one. He is going to swing this team one way or the other. Unless they pick up someone who we feel can be an adequate point guard, waiting in case something goes wrong. Igor is number two for me because I think he's going to make a big difference for everyone. He will get credited as he should with the development of the youngsters that they develop. And Ayton is three for me. We just talked about him.
Next question. Mike Notham. I hope I pronounced your name right. Apologies if not. What do you think Igor's starting bench / closing units might look like? What potential lineup are you most looking forward to seeing in action? Do you want to go or should I go? Okay, I'll do starting. Knight, Booker. Ooh. I want to say Jackson, but it might be Warren, power forward Ariza, Ayton. So that small forward, I just don't know. I think it's closer than people think.
I believe that you need Josh Jackson to start to do what they want to do, which is clearly do the switchy wings stuff. They want to do that unless we just haven't seen it from TJ Warren and it's going to be something unexpected with him in terms of defensive development. I don't see it at all. They ran so much stuff around him last year, and that's not going to happen. He is the fourth option on the court with those three guys. Knight, Booker, Ayton, Knight by default because the ball is going to be in his hand so much because he's the point guard. I don't really understand him being on the court, but at the same time, the counter argument is Jackson is an offensive-minded player right now. So it goes a couple of different ways, but I believe that Jackson, you drafted him. That's why you drafted him, to start. Yeah. And last year, he was a rookie. It was understandable. I think it's his time, and I think he should be the guy. And TJ's fate in this league has always been six-man score off the bench. First year with Igor as the head coach, I think this is the time to pull the trigger. I think he should start at small forward. I'm not sure if he will. Does Igor feel that Ariza, Knight, and Booker is enough experience on the court to where he can rely on Jackson as a second-year player? Or does he want more experience on the court, even more with starters at least, and have TJ start there? I think there's a question somewhere in here of where Mikal Bridges fits in, and that's where you go to closing lineups and bench lineups where you ask, where does he fall in necessarily? And I'm not exactly sure.
He fits with TJ, it almost seems like. Like, if you have him and TJ as wings, he helps space the court, and maybe they run that second unit, the offense, they maybe could run it to free up TJ and get him moving off the ball, come off screen, catch, and make a quick move as the defense is already off kilter, and Bridges would help a lot with that. So would Bender. I guess you could have Tyson rolling or something, or Rashawn Holmes. So that, to me, is the backup unit. I guess Okobo's in there as a shooter also, which helps. So, yeah, if you put Josh in that second unit, let's say TJ wins that starting job, because I think they could fit him in, either one in, because neither of them shoot, and it's kind of the same deal, but defense aside, obviously. But that second unit is going to have trouble scoring if you don't have TJ, who do you have? Is Okobo the best creator?
Plot twist, what if Ariza is starting at the three and Jackson and Warren are both coming off the bench and you start Bender at the four?
Ooh. That would be fun.
My argument with Ariza, me and you went back and forth at this either in the office or on Twitter or something, when Ariza was being discussed, was I did not understand the point of bringing him here if he was going to be a small forward long term.
Yeah.
Because if you bring him in long term, you're going to have to play him at the four a lot. And I don't think, as a guy who now has 14, 15 years of NBA experience, whatever it is, I think it might even be more than that right now. Isn't he? He's at least a decade into the league, at least, right?
I should know this.
It's somewhere around
I'm
there.
Blanking,
this is August brain.
It's a minute.
Right now. My point was, he's not going to want that physicality over a long contract, but now that it's a one-year deal, I can see it more likely that he plays a good chunk of his minutes, not a good chunk, most of his minutes at the four. There's also a chance that he doesn't, and there's also a chance that he spends a lot of time still playing the three or the two. And I look at, I still wouldn't get it. I wouldn't get him starting it. I don't understand why he would not be playing the four for most of his minutes. But maybe that's not what we're talking about. And because, to take it to Mike's question at the end, which is, what lineups are you looking forward to seeing in action? I'm looking forward to seeing what we saw at Summer League, which was Bender and Ayton as a front court, and just any three of those perimeter guys out there. So Booker, Jackson, Bridges, Booker, Jackson, Warren, Jackson, Warren, Bridges. I know you need to find a point guard somewhere in there, but just the combination of the three wings, Davon Reed is in that talk as well. Those three wings and those two bigs, I'm excited to see what you can get done, because in theory, which is our tag of the day here, because this team is probably not going to be very good, in theory, Bender and Ayton are modern bigs. And having two modern bigs with three modern wings seems like a lot of fun to me, and that's probably the most exciting lineup combination I want to see.
I'm trying to think of a fun lineup combination that includes a point guard. Like, I want to see Booker, Bridges, Jackson, Ayton, and I guess Knight would work. I'll say that, because I want to see some shooting. I want to see, like, you're a pretty good balance of athleticism and shooting. And that one's pretty good. You could throw in, you could go Booker at point, Sumi, Bridges, Jackson, Ariza, Ayton. And I would like to see Bender in one of those too, but they have so many wings that when you talk about switchy.
What if they throw all four of those guys out there? Ayton's not even on the floor, and it's just
Wing City.
Bridges, Jackson, Warren, Booker, and Reed. And we're just daring you. We have three really good shooters on the floor, two guys who are very crafty offensively. We can switch literally everything. Everyone's going to crash the glass really hard.
I hope they
just dare them to do something like that. It could be, so it could be, you could do Ariza, Bridges, Booker, Knight, and then just one of those guys like Reed, for example, and sit both Jackson and Warren. And those are all five guys that can shoot and all five guys that can switch. The height obviously is going to be a disadvantage. Booker would be playing the three in that scenario. Ariza or Bridges would be playing the five. But you'd have five shooters, and this team had two shooters last year.
Yeah.
So the thought of getting five shooters on the floor together would be pretty sweet.
I think going back to the like exciting things to see is whether like Kokoshkov creates his lineups, like he tries to settle in with his own and force like teams to go small with them, or if he's just like, all right, we're not very good, we're just gonna match up with you. Like, if we play the Rockets, we're going small, and maybe Ayton's not on the court as much. Like, that'll be interesting to me. What else do you want to touch on this list of questions?
Dan asked a question that we've kind of talked around a lot already, is what do you do with the fourth year options on Bender and Chris if they are not picked up? Is the player an unrestricted or restricted free agent next offseason? They're unrestricted if they let go of the option.
Yeah.
They're gonzo. This all depends on how they look. Bender, if he looks like the same player he has for the first 2 years, I would not let go of Bender until his contract is fully up. That's just how much I still believe in a 7'1" guy who can switch on defense and shoot threes. Those guys don't exist, and I want to make absolutely sure until he's 22 or 23 that it's just not going to happen. Chris, to me, is the same way, just because they're top 10 picks, and I'm not sure what to do with the roster spots anyway. I would not decline them, but this is blog boys analysis, and there's front office goings on, including how much money these guys make in the years of those contracts. I believe Bender is somewhere in the region of, I want to say, $6-8 million, because he went fourth. Chris is a little lower, but he still makes a lot of money, and that's money they could actually really use in the offseason. But again, my theme for the next year is going to be, so what? The 20 teams are going to have cap space. I'm not really declining Bender, completely giving up on him. But there is a... Isn't there a scenario where they look so bad that you give up on both of them this year?
I don't think they would. Like, just coming from a... If you're Ryan McDonough and you picked them and committed to them and bought into them, like, I'm just a stubborn person, I guess, but I wouldn't ever just be like, oh yeah, I completely screwed up and botched that entire draft night, basically. Like, I don't think humans in powerful positions are just like, oh yeah, I did terrible, I'm just gonna that's a sunk cost. Like, and I think like Bender is closer to me as far as panning out. Like, I think he's gonna be a reserve forward at worst. He's not going to be out of the league. Chris is scaring me a little bit until we see what's happened this summer. Because the only thing we know about him this summer is he played in a Seattle pickup game and people got excited and let me throw together a mixtape of my own highlights from playing at the park in Tempe and show you that, because it'll look cool.
I was more asking for both players, not for the Suns let go both of them in the same offseason, but is there a situation where both could be so bad that there's a situation? And I think there is.
Oh, yeah.
They could.
There's a 10% chance. 20.
Yeah, there is more of a chance that the fact that there is that much of a chance shows how much of a failure those two have been as picks, which is kind of the whole point of the discussion, I suppose. Let's go Jeffrey, who asks, how much longer is Chandler on the team? I think this is the golden question surrounding the team right now outside of point guard, because you have Rashawn Holmes now. So Chandler is mentored at DeAndre Ayton, but at the same time makes a lot of money and might want to play elsewhere and might want to go compete for a playoff spot on the Western. Like the team that might be starting JaVale McGee. At center.
Dominguez High School stand-up.
Yeah, so I believe that there is going to become... The one theme in the past couple of years is the Suns have not been afraid to do very... They have not been huge by any means. Very small favors to players, trading P.J. Tucker to Toronto, getting Dudley to a situation where he would play. They've done that in the past couple of years, and I think just buying out Chandler would be another one.
Yeah.
You would buy out a player, assuming they're buying out Chandler, that means he just doesn't want to be here. Buy him out, bring back Big Sauce. Now you've got a player who loves being here and going from that in a third big role anyway. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I don't think he's playing for the team again. I think he's done.
Let's take this one from Michael Finley, who's, I assume, is not that Michael Finley. Whose offensive game will be the most improved in Kokoschkov's system, and who will be the most challenged in adjusting to it? I think challenged would be one of the small forwards, TJ or Josh. Josh didn't look good in summer league. I think TJ actually might fit better. I'm going to go with Josh then.
I think TJ fits better just because you know exactly what he is already. He's still pretty young, of course, and doesn't have a decade in the league by any means, but you know what you're getting from him. Josh is still a bit of a mystery. We saw it in summer league, to say the least, that some of his bad habits with shot selection and everything can put a wrench in things. I think with how much the ball moves and how much guys are going to not have the ball in their hands for a long time, I think if Brandon Knight was ever to become a very good NBA point guard again, like he was for that very small stretch with Milwaukee, I think Igor's system is the one to do it, because I was the moron tweeting 5 years ago, 4 years ago, whenever it was, when he got traded, I tweeted something like, Brandon Knight is a two guard, I can't stop dancing, because I thought he was the perfect combo guard, two guard guy who had a reputation as a good defender, a good shooter, and a really good scorer. And you put that next to Eric Bledsoe, and I thought it was going to work really well. I think this is the type of system that gets him into that role the best, and that's where I can see the most success for him. So I believe that he is going to be the player by default who improves the most, because Brandon Knight is not going to dribble for more than 5 seconds in a row on this team unless there's a tip out on an air ball or something.
But he is
going to
have it in his
left.
Hands, yeah.
But he is going to have it in his hands enough to still be in a rhythm, and yeah. I think that's important. And I think him having so many options around him offensively is also going to help. And yeah, this is me and you are both in on him looking better. And I think he will look better. And to answer Michael Finley's question, shouts to number four. yeah, I think it's him.
Who were you on most challenged? Did you? I'm sorry. I might not have been paying attention.
We said Josh.
I was going Josh, yeah.
Is DeAndre in here by default just because he has to get used to this system? And it's not a system that is going to directly define him in a role. It's not going to be you standing in the post there. It has him moving. We saw it in that first game where he was so excited, so much adrenaline, and at the same time was being asked to do so much on both ends offensively as well with how many screens he's setting and everything. I think it is going to be the biggest challenge to him. Because of all the movement, he has to be a good screen setter now. And he's not. He's very bad at that, in fact. So I'll say DeAndre by default just because he's kind of in a rookie role.
Any other questions that popped?
Oh, any other questions that popped? That was definitely a time where you started talking and I started checking my phone and I wasn't paying attention. So goes both ways, Mr. Zimmerman.
Sorry I lost your attention.
Okay, this is not... Is your name actually Tortuga? If it is, respect. David Stack Guy is his handle, so I think his name is David. David asks, will Josh Jackson's offensive approach, or lack thereof, fit into Kokoschkov's modern open style of play? I think this is the same sort of thing I was going with the Brandon Knight question, or Brandon Knight answer, where I believe it will eliminate those bad habits and bring out the best in him if he buys into it.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. I agree with you, sir.
Do we really want to do this start a franchise with stuff? Suns webmaster asked us a couple of what ifs, like start a franchise with Suns player or other player. He said start a franchise with Josh Jackson or Andre Drummond.
That one's easy.
Yes, it is. Because we have no idea what Josh Jackson is at all, and we have a really good idea of what Andre Drummond is.
Trade him for him right now. I would do it, yeah.
Not with the center alignment. I would not want to start DeAndre Ayton at power forward.
No, I would do that just so I could trade him again.
Jeez, Kevin, relax. Calm down. The argument here is going to be that we know what Josh Jackson is, but what we just talked about Josh Jackson for probably a combined 4 or 5 minutes already on him is what he was advertised as in the draft. We did not see in year one much.
Still malleable. Let's use that word, malleable.
Which is the counter argument to Andre Drummond is we know what he is, which is a very, very good center in this league. He has his faults for sure, but I would take Andre Drummond, yeah.
The other one's Booker versus Lillard, which is curious.
Yeah, the other one, Suns Webmaster asked, Booker or Lillard?
Suns, I would take Booker because he's younger.
I feel my bias coming in towards Booker when I say Booker, which is bad, especially from a Suns perspective because of how desperate the team is for players to the caliber.
Damian Lillard's really good, though.
Damian Lillard is really, really, really good. But I would effectively take in what Suns Webmaster said. He said lots of things to unpack. One, Booker on a new contract and locked up. Two, he's the youngest player on Team USA this year, but Dame was first-team All-NBA at the most competitive position in the league last year. The most competitive position in the... Okay. I thought I read that wrong, but I didn't. Wednesday, everyone. Hump day. Get there. Dame, it's... Book is 6 years younger. We don't know how good he is yet.
Yeah.
This is not his peak, and he averaged 25-4-4.
Sounds hypocritical after we're just like, we don't know how good Josh Jackson will be, but...
Bryce Out of the Sun did a guess Devin Booker's line, stat line for next year, and I think it was 27-5-7. I think that's a bit ambitious, but at the same time, if you asked me, do I think Devin Booker will ever average 27-5-7 in his career, I think I would at least heavily think about it, which tells you how we feel about his... He has Harden equity. It's not completely...
Kevin O'Connor listed him, what, second on like a MVP sleeper list for next year, and he's like, I don't think the Suns are going to be good. He's not going to win MVP, but like he's... That dude who you don't know what he's going to be just in a few months here.
You all have heard my Booker take a million times. He has taken a huge step forward in his first 3 years in the league. So what does a huge step forward in year four look like when he was, I'll say it to everyone in their face, he was one of the 12 best players in the Western Conference in the first half of last year. He should have been an all-star. I'll keep saying it over and over again. People heavily disagree with me. That's fine. I don't care. He was that guy for sure, without a doubt. That guy in a full year in year four around a competent team with a competent to potentially be a great head coach, how great can he be in year four? Is that going to be a huge step forward? And if that huge step forward is it 27-5-7 and he looks like the next James Harden? That question is why I take him over Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
When he's 22.
And it's not a stretch. You're not stretching there. We good? We didn't mention that the Suns have a preseason schedule out. We're going to have an extensive preview of the New Zealand Breakers. I don't know what we're doing next. What are we doing next? Camp's going to start
soon. In terms of...
Next pod,
we'll figure something out. I think there is an off-season recap around that we can do. We've done that a little bit in the past here, but there's a lot of goings on around the league. Maybe we'll check in on some former Suns and see what they're up to.
Oh man, was Shaq Harrison's guaranteed date today?
It kind of was, and it seems like he's sticking around. It was only like 10 grand, right?
Or 50?
Only 10 grand. Okay. Oh god. Oh man, I don't like my life sometimes. we can end it there. I think that's good. We can end it there. What a great... See, Kevin, the running joke we have here is that Kevin sometimes can't...
My closes.
You don't plan your closes. That's a good way to say it, but we're going to plan our close right now because this is the close. Goodbye. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your questions. See you next time.